One has to follow the prescribed rules and regulations. of religious principles in order to rise up to the platform of knowledge. Because the knowledge, by knowledge and devotion only, can one liberate himself from the clutches of mind, delusion. The two different names of address given to Arjuna are also significant. To address him as Kaunteya signifies his great blood relations from his mother's side. And to address him as Bhagavata signifies his greatness from his father's side. From both sides, he is supposed to have a great heritage. A great heritage brings responsibility in the matter of proper discharge of duties. Therefore, he cannot avoid fighting. Shiva Prabhupada Ji. Martasparsha Sukhaudiya Shiva Shusu Karukraha Ramayana Nidya Stamsi Krishna Sarama. For some of Kuti, the non-permanent appearance of heaviness and distress and their disappearance in due course. Alike the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer season, they arise from sense perception or sign of barter, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Ramana Shri Vasudeva Bhakti Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. As I already said, this talks is very important for us not only to understand, but to practice in our daily life. And it's one thing to understand it, another thing is to practice it. Because usually we understand things there. But even if we understand it theoretically, this is already a good step in the right direction. So here basically, Krishna can teach us to cure Arjuna from his disease. And this is the disease of all conditioned living beings. The first chapter is called Arjuna Vishada Yoga, the yoga of dejection, the yoga of desperation, the yoga of grief. And this is the problem of all of us in this material existence. From time to time, we become depressed. From time to time, we become dejected. From time to time, we become totally, completely paralyzed. And Krishna, the whole Bhagavad Gita is basically the cure of this disease. Krishna wants us to be happy. Krishna is happy himself. He's always smiling. That is his very important feature. In fact, one of God's goddess of Srila Prabhupada, he was sent to India in his search for God. And when you go to India, and basically you will be confused because there are so many gods there. So many. Practically everyone is there. Everyone prays to do this incantation and that incantation. And this man, he was very thoughtful. He was going around, looking at different gods, hearing different incarnations. And ultimately, he came to the conclusion of only Krishna is God. Why? Because he's always smiling. Everyone else is not. Everyone else is fighting, has some weapons, and Krishna and his weapon is blue. His weapon is love. Because actually, it's much more difficult to play with flute. They say that in order to fight, Krishna needs only one finger. That's his finger, to call his Sudarshan chakra. To play the flute, he uses 10 of them. So, he came to this conclusion that Krishna is God because he manifests the most sublime quality, which we all strive for, that is happiness and love. And that's the truth. You don't need any other proof. You know, you may have some other activity, but ultimately the essence of life is to be happy, and Krishna wants us to be happy. But at the same time, he sees us, he sees the reality, and he sees all these gloomy faces and all these distorted, you know, eyes and all that. And he sees Arjuna. And Arjuna is in the same condition. He's totally dejected, he's morose, he's fearful, he's crying. He totally lost his ability of fight. He is totally useless because all his forces left his body. And there's no, I don't want it. And this is the disease of everyone. Nowadays they say that the biggest disease is depression. The people make more money to cure depression than anyone else. And so many people, they have this recipe for depression or that recipe for depression. This pill for depression or that pill. And of course, Krishna would have given Arjuna a pill. Arjuna, please take this pill and fight. Come on. But he knows that the pill is not a solution. That solution should go deeper. That the real solution is the fundamental problem of our existential condition. And basically, Arjuna represents every one of us, and the reason, the cause of our dejection, of our desperation, of our greed, is one. Because we don't understand our real nature. Because we have forgotten it. We have forgotten ourselves and we have forgotten our relationship with Krishna. And this is what we have to realize. And here Krishna starts giving the cure how to realize it. Because again, it's not enough just to theoretically know it. It's good enough for the beginning to know theoretically. That's already a good message. Krishna comes and says, you are eternal. That's good. You know, I remember when I heard this, you know, I was very delighted. And people there, they become delighted. But it's not enough just to have this mental kind of joy, knowing that you are eternal. You have to know this by the means of your own experience. And here Krishna explains how to know it, not just theoretically, but practically. He starts with this. Actually, Prabhupada, he makes this point in the introduction of Bhagavad Gita that our main problem is that our very existence is conducted in the atmosphere of non-existence. We are eternal soul. By nature, we are eternal. And Prabhupada says very beautifully after that. He said, we are not deserved to be threatened by non-existence. This is the greatest fear of everyone in this life. We are afraid that we will not exist. But Krishna comes and says, rejoice. Rejoice. There is no death. There is no death for the soul. The soul is eternal. The soul is eternal. And he gives this very important message. And then he says how we should understand this. He is not going to make us into the blind believers. Sometimes people think that we just have to believe. The religion is all about belief. We just believe something, you know. Just believe and that's it. I remember once I went to some Christian group in the beginning, and, you know, long to go. And in this Christian group, somebody, you know, started preaching to me. He was a sleepy fellow. He just woke up, it was 12 in the morning. Midday, and he woke up and I came and he started preaching. And he said, you know, if you believe in Jesus Christ, then you are saved. Your name is in the book of living. And if you are not, your name is in another book. So I said, that's it. He said, yeah, that's it. And then you can sleep, please. That's it, you're done. No need to do anything else. Just believe. And then your book will be nicely, neatly written in the book of music, and you know, then you can take rest and sit back and, you know, watch TV. Because that's it, you're done. No, Krishna doesn't want it. Krishna doesn't want blind followers. Krishna, otherwise, Krishna would very quickly finish the whole Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna would say, I don't want to fight. Krishna would should have said to him, please fight and I will take all your sins. Just believe I will save you, just fight. And that's it. You know, I'm your savior. From now on, I'm your savior.
not. He doesn't want the blind following. He wants us to understand this very deeply. And therefore, when he said that you are a donor, and then he gives a very interesting point in the previous verse, and he says, Vehinasmin yathave komaram yovanam jara. Tathave hantarapati virasatranamukhyati. He said that, the dhira, the somebody who is sober, humbly, somebody who is not drunken, who is not infatuated by the illusory happiness of this world, he is not bewildered when the body is changing. He said, after all, it's a normal thing. We all know that the body is changing. You know, you were a child, and then you became an adult, and then after that you become an old man. You know, nobody laments so much. Of course, when you become adult and then you become old, and sometimes people do lament. They do lament, and they try to fight with it. They dye their hairs, the gray hairs become black again. It looks really unnatural, you know. You see somebody is really old and wrinkles and black hairs. And Krishna says, Vira. Vira is not doing this. Somebody who is sober, he knows the real situation. And he's not lamenting over these things because it's inevitable. Because you cannot do anything about it. The sign of a sober person, of the person who really knows what the meaning of life is, that he is not being disturbed about something which he cannot change. If I cannot change it anyway, the body will die. Why should I worry about it? It will die anyway. Why should I worry? But Krishna makes a very nice point in this verse, is that the very fact that you can see all these changes, the very fact that you observe all these changes, is the proof that you are not this body. Because if you were this body, you wouldn't see this change. Because it would be you. The very fact that you see the changes is that you are moved from this body. You're the absorber of the body. You're the possessor of the body. Like when we say, you possess the wealth. If somebody says, I have the wealth, it means that wealth is separate from him. Right? That's him and that's his wealth. When we say that there is body, and when we see that the body is changing, and sometimes we lament that the body is changing, or sometimes we don't lament that the body is changing, but we watch and see, you know, all these wrinkles and, you know. And it's actually very difficult for people. I remember my mother, she used to, you know, to take away all the gray hairs, you know. But then ultimately she realized that I would become totally bald. But the point is that I know this body because I can see the changes in the body. As simple as this. Because if you would change with the body, you wouldn't see the changes. Simple. To absorb something, you have to be outside of this. This is the point of physics, you know, and you don't, physics, there is a position where you can see that somebody is moving, or something is moving. But if you are moving together with this object, you cannot see the movement, right? If you are sitting in a train, and you are not looking in the window, or even better, you are sitting in the plane, you know, you don't see, you don't know that it's moving. You cannot see that it's moving. Can you see that the plane is moving if you are sitting inside? No. No, you are nicely drinking your tea and, you know, coffee and eating your chicken or something. That's what you do. And at the same time, you're moving with the speed 900 kilometers an hour. But you know, and it's pretty fast. So, but you don't notice, you don't know about it, because you're moving together with this. But the fact that you can see the changes in the body means that there is something which is not the body, which can see the changes in the body. And this should give this brilliant example, like he says, you know, if you're a dhira, if you know the things as they are, you don't have to lament about it. You know, you're not bewildered by these changes. You know, as much as the youth is not being
is not lamenting, you know, I used to be a young boy and I was a young and I knew no. You're just taking. And that's the point which Krishna wants to teach us. Don't lament over something which is beyond your control. There is death and there is birth, and it's totally beyond your control. And this is not, should not be the subject of my worry. And then Arjuna, commentators, they say that when Arjuna hears this, he says, but still Krishna, you know, I know, maybe I know this body, I have heard this. On a Sunday news class, somebody told me I know this body. I heard this already, so many times. Did you hear this already? Did I say this in you to you? Like Arjuna says, so what? Still I feel happy and still I feel this way. What do I do with this? How to deal with this? It's still a problem. You know, your nice statement that I know this body doesn't solve my problems because still I feel this happiness and distress. And Krishna speaks this verse to give us a hint how we should deal with the happiness and distress in order to understand who we are. Because usually people, they don't learn anything in the life. Oftentimes you can hear that people say that this life is a lesson. And, you know, so many wise people have said that this life is a lesson, but usually nobody learns this lesson. And this is very clearly can be seen at the time of death. Because despite so many lessons, people are still so much, or this kind, and so much worse, and so desperate. And it's such an agony they are living this world. Prabhupada, he used to joke. He said, I had a friend of mine, and he was dying. And he was saying, doctor, please give me 1 year. I have so many plans of the field. And Prabhupada used to joke. He said, Krishna will give you the whole life to fulfill your plans. If you are dying, there is this conception in your heart that I still have this desire, that desire, this desire, don't worry. And that's why you fulfill all these desires and acquire more desires and again die and again acquire. It's no problem. So Krishna gives us a very beautiful hint here and we have to really understand what he means to go deeper. He says, Matra sparsha sukhamya, shitasha sukhadukhaya. He says, first of all, he says, Matra sparsha sukhamya. Matra means senses. And matra is coming from a Sanskrit root, miyake. Miyake means to measure. Basically, senses which we have, which is a very interesting thing which we have, and we always play with the senses. The eyes, the nose, the tongue, the skin which we have, the ears, the 5 senses. It's meters. They always measure. There's nothing else. You know, the tongue is a special kind of device which is measuring the tastes. This is sweet, this is hot, this is so sweet, and this is this is even sweeter. I don't know, this is bitter. Oh my goodness. Oh, very good. Right? This is sweet, this is bitter. And the eyes are measuring force, and the ears are measuring different, you know, height of the sound. And the nose is also a special instrument, and it's a special, very interesting instrument. It measures different smells. So that's what's going on. He says, you have these 5 meters, right? That's it, you have 5 meters. And then, matra sparsha sukhamya. Sparsha means the contact between the meters, between our senses and the sense object. And that's what's going on, that's what we are doing. You know, you have, in order to meter something, you have to come in contact with it. Your eye is coming in contact, your nose is coming in contact with the smell, your tongue is coming in contact with the taste. That's what it is. But then he says, this is basically, it's going on, you know, taking all these measures. But then he says, Matra sparsha sukhamya, shitasya sukhadukhaya. He says, when you measure it by your senses, then you feel either cold or hot, warm. And basically when he says cold or hot, he means all other senses as well. It's either, you know, stinks, or it's a nice aroma. Or it's, you know, bitter or sweet. Or it's a horrible sound or nice sound, sweet sound. So this is what it is. You feel it, you measure it. And then you interpret it as sukha-dukha. You interpret all these measurements which is going on in your senses, and you say, oh, this I like, and this I hate, and this I like, and this I hate. And this is all not real. Because it's totally artificial. You know, because if you can look around you, this is also relative. Today you like this, tomorrow you like something different. Today you like this song. Like before Christian consciousness, many of you probably like rock music. So nice. Such a nice sound. Especially when your ears already almost, you know, the don't hear anything. It's so nice because it makes you dull. That's actually the secret behind the rock music. The rock music should make you totally dull and then you feel nice. because you don't understand anything anymore. So you are just jumping like a doll. So, but then, you know, but then you become evil. And your taste changes. Somehow you don't like anymore this, you know. And you're like, well, you like something different. But it's all relative. It's all relative. In one country people like something, in another country people like something else. You know, even here, it's so relative. Somebody says it's hot, it's so hot, and he's sweating, and he said, oh, it's horrible. And somebody else said, no, it's so cold now. And somebody says the cold is good, somebody says the hot is good. You know, it's all relative. Basically, the sukha and dukkha is all composed. It's all more or less interpretation of your sensory perceptions. And you can change it. And later Krishna will say, whatever you can change is not real. It doesn't exist. You know, in the morning you like something, in the evening you like something else. You know, what is this? And people, they really go mad over these sense perceptions or their impressions of what is sukha, happiness, and what is distress. They apply or invest so much importance to these relative conceptions. And it's all conceptions. And you can change your conceptions. What you like now, you may not like later. So that's what Krishna says. And he says, first of all, you try to learn how to tolerate. There's a nice story about King Solomon. King Solomon, he was a wise man. And he had a ring. And on this ring, it was written, every single past. So when he had some very difficult time in his life, very difficult, some distress would come, some really problem would come, he had a habit. He used to look at his dream. And he would get some souls from this. Every single past. You know, something is really bad is going to be looked at his head, it's all in every single past. But at one point in his life, it became too much. You know, it was so bad. And this bad situation was lasting for a long time. He was looking into the ring and it didn't help. So ultimately, he became very angry. And he took off the ring from his hand. And it was very ancient ring. He didn't even know where he got it from some ancestors. And he took off the ring from his head and he just threw it on the floor. And then he looked at the ring. And he noticed that there is something also written on the back side, or the inner side of the ring. And he never thought about this. He never seen it. So he became a little curious, and he, you know, picked up the ring and he looked what was written inside. And inside was written, this will all also pass. This will also pass. Don't be too anxious about it. This is a lot of us. So
So that's basically the advice which Krishna gives. Don't apply too much importance to this. Because what happens with us, we apply too much importance to all these things which is happening with us, this happiness and distress, this perception or that perception, this feeling or that feeling, only because we don't know the whole picture. That's perhaps the most important point which I wanted to say. When Krishna says, and this is the point which he makes throughout our routine, when Krishna says, don't be so hanged up about your happiness and distress, sukha and dukkha. And he will always say this throughout the Gita, he says, fame and infamy, happiness and distress, death and birth. Don't be so much anxious about these whole things, because when you are anxious about these things, you don't see the whole picture. And you're only anxious about this whole thing because you don't see the whole picture. We're so narrow-minded. And our consciousness is so tiny that we're trying to extract something, one thing, not understanding that this is two sides of one coin. What Krishna wants to make the point, this very important point, is that, you know, coin has always two sides. You cannot ask the coin, please give me one side of the coin. I don't want another side of the coin. Have you ever seen the coin as one side? Can you ask, please give me the coin which will only have only one side? I don't need the other side. No. But people don't understand this. You know, when they say this is happiness, they don't know that for the happiness there is some bonus attached to it, which is called distress. If you get happiness, it means you will get distress. And people cannot understand this, they cannot grasp it, and they sometimes become angry. I'm saying this, and I'm a little afraid that you will become angry. Because it hurts. You know, it hurts. We want to be happy, but we don't understand that there is a price to pay. The price for happiness is distress. I'm really sorry to say this. We want to get birth, but we don't know that there is a price to pay for this, which is called death. We want all the good things, but we don't understand that there is always something which is totally opposite to this. And the more we enjoy something which is enjoyable, the more we will suffer later from something which is suffering, miserable. This is the law of nature. Unfortunately, I'm really sorry to say this. I don't want to say this. I don't like it. I don't like it myself. But what can I do? I can't change. That's life. Krishna says, if you're born, you will die. I'm sorry to say this, but this is bad. And if you're happy now, you will become unhappy tomorrow. And if you're not much attached to the happiness, and if you see the whole world, and if you relate to the whole world through this conception of happiness and distress, you will always be in happiness and distress. Or you will always be in distress. Ultimately, you will end up in distress. Because happiness, it brings happiness when it comes. But when the happiness goes, what does it bring? Distress. And distress, it's all relative conception. Distress gives distress when it comes. But it gives happiness when it goes. So it's all the same, you know, when it goes in happiness, when it comes it's unhappiness, and then it comes it's unhappiness, and then it goes in happiness. You can't be rooted. Being in this totally false conception. People waste their life trying to catch this false conception of happiness because it doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. It's all mixed here. You know, and what Krishna says, basically, that you should give up this false conception of life. That the value in life, which so-called normal people have, is this happiness and attached to the distress. You know? And they don't know that there's another thing. You know, it's all relative conceptions, and you have to go beyond these relative conceptions. Like sun. You know, we have day and night, right? And day and night is opposites, two opposites. Day and night is a manifestation like happiness and distress, winter and summer. This is all opposites. But day is relative conception, and the night is relative conception. What is day? Day is when there is no night. And what is night? Night when there is no day. Or you can say day when there is light. And when there is no light, it's night. You know? But basically, this is all relative from each other. You know, if I ask you to define what is distress, you will have to give the definition through happiness. Right? If you try to define what is distress, you will have to say that distress is best when I'm not happy. And you cannot really avoid it, you know, because it's all relative conception. But what Krishna says, like relative conception of day and night here, if you go to sun, there is day or night there. If you ask somebody who is living on the sun, is it day or night today? Now, they do not understand what you're talking about. Well, what is day, what is night? It's always sunny here. Because it's sun. So what Krishna says, that if you understand who you are, if you really understand who you are, then there will be no happiness and no distress for you. You always will be happy or blissful in another sense, in an absolute sense. Now, you are distressed in a relative sense and you are happy in a relative sense. But Krishna says that you can be happy in an absolute sense. And you can be happy, or and you can be distressed in an absolute sense, but it's also nice to be distressed in an absolute sense. That's a very high conception. I don't want to talk about this. This is a little too much for this discourse. But, but basically what Krishna says, don't get attached to these relative conceptions which you have. This is ridiculous. This is all ridiculous. And this is what he says. That's what we have to understand. Like there is this one very nice story in Bhagavad. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a story about King Chitraketu. And King Chitraketu, he was a king. And kings are very engrossed into this concept of good and bad, happiness and distress. And this particular king was unhappy. He was powerful, he was wealthy, but it's always something mystic. It's always there's some desire which I still have to fulfill. And in this particular case of the king Chitraketu, he was unhappy because he didn't have son. He was trying, and he had so many queens, and he tried so many times with each and every queen, and didn't work. And he became totally desperate. I said, I don't give anything, I want some. And then two sages came and he said, I want some. And they said, no, this is not within your family. This is not in this life. This life you can't enjoy. You can't really enjoy this little baby bubbling something, No, this is not. You didn't deserve it. He said, no, I won't. No, I won't take this one. He said, yeah, okay. Okay, if you really want it, if you really, really, really want it, then we'll give you some, but with one conception, with one condition. This son will bring you immense happiness. But this very son will bring you immense distress. He said, yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready, please give me some. This is what people say. I guess I'm ready. And they will say, your son will be called Harsha Chokha. Harsha means smile. Harsha means joy. And Ashoka means distress. So he said, yes, I'm ready. They gave blessings, and his queen, favorite queen, gave birth to my son. And the son was so nice. He was smiling so nice. He was so happy, he was wonderful, bubbling and breathing and mumbling and you know, everything was there. It was a perfect reward. All the desires that we feel, he was so happy. But then all other things. Yeah. And he became totally neglectful of all other things, and he only liked this. Gave birth to his
Son, and the other thing that he made so envious, and they poisoned the Son.
And even the Son was so small, and it was so cruel, and they poisoned the Son, and he became so distressed, so distressed.
But, you know, and he said, why? But, you know, none of them said, they told you. You said, I'm ready. But what happened with him, because it was so close to each other, he could understand that this is two sides of our coin. If you have happiness, you will have distress. And then he became totally transcendental devotee of the Lord. He understood, you know, this is what life is all about. He realized, but we are so short-sighted. We get little happiness now. We get, and flash is so much. And then tomorrow we get some more, you know, some days later we get this mess. We can't understand, we can't make a connection. Like I heard that some tribal people in Africa here, white people came here, they didn't understand that the birth of a child is a result of conception, because there's 9 months in between. It's a long period. You can forget what you did 9 months after. And because you're short-sighted, you don't understand that this is the cause and this is the effect. And that's exactly what is happening with us. When we experience something, we forgot about the cause of it. When we experience distress, we totally forgot that this distress was caused by some happiness, which we experienced before. That was this, and therefore we're wasting our life. And therefore Krishna says here, Adalamani has some delicious food. When it comes and when it goes, don't worry. It will come and you will feel some happiness. Don't be overly late. Don't be too much absorbed in it. Because when you get too much absorbed in this feeling of happiness, it will create very strong samskara. And this samskara will be the cause of your future birth. Because you will want to repeat it again and again and again. Now or later. And if this stress comes, please don't take it too seriously. Just watch what Krishna says. As much as you watch or observe all the changes in your body, observe in the same way the changes in your mind. And be happy. Have fun. You know, like when you see on a stage, like the actors, they act something which is really, really, you know, really tragic. What do you feel when you look at this? You feel good about it. First of all, you feel good that it doesn't have to miss you. That's one reason. But the second reason is that you're just seeing and you're watching, and you just watch this. You're watching. So people, they pay a lot of money to go into this suspense, how do you call this, horror movies, right? What do they do? They pay money to experience some horror, because they watch it. So Krishna says, you don't have to pay any money. You just watch what is happening, the movie which is happening in your mind. Yeah, there's so much movies going on there. Today you find this way and that way. If you learn how to watch it, if you learn how to absorb it from the neutral position of the absorber, or as Prabhupada explains here, if you learn how to absorb it from the position of the scriptures, which is the absolute vantage point, if you take the scriptures, which describe the beauties, and take this as the position to watch your whole life, then you will have a lot of fun. No matter what happens with you, you know, something bad happens with you, you look at this. Prabhupada, he gave an amazing example. And this was an example of his own life. Once there was a period in his school when there were so many problems. Of course, practically every day in this room. Once Prabhupada said, spiritual movement in the material world is a difficult proposition. it's different. Something is wrong. It wasn't bombing. During this very heavy, you know, story with Mr. Nile and Mr. Nile was in the cage and all the foolish disciples of Srila Prabhupada, they wanted to give and they were really, so all this, you know, tragedy was going on. And Prabhupada was fighting, and not only this, you know, in some other parts of the world, all the skinnies who became all of a sudden pure devotees, they created some troubles here and there in New York and London. In Germany, the police came and the arts were there, and the temple, this and that. It's always heavy. So, you know, it became so heavy. So heavy. Prabhupada is the head. It means that he is solely responsible for everything. He is the head of this movement. He is an old man. He is 70 something year old man. And he's, you know, and it's all heavy, and it's all his heavy. And, you know, the news were coming every day. And every news was the bad news, the bad news, the bad news. Ultimately, you know, somebody called, and ultimately the telegram came. Heavy, something really bad happened somewhere. And Prabhupada looked at this telegram, and his face became like a stone. And I know the voices were very near him. They looked at him, and I didn't know what to do with this thing. And then Prabhupada didn't say a word. He went to his room, and he locked the door in the room. Somebody, some clever disciple, decided to watch through this keyhole. So he started watching. And he saw that it's amazing. The Prabhupada lay down on the floor and started lying. He says, lying. Very heavy. like the heaviest man in the cage. He was lying. And, you know, this person said that it was like the demigods were showering flowers, you know, these lovers were hunting like the demigods. Because he was not fixed. He was not affected. He was not. He knew that this was just, you know, this is just some kind of leela. And I had to do it, I had to be this leela. I had to perform my role, and I had to, you know, perform my duties. I have to follow my duties very nicely. There is no exemption for this. I have to do it. And that's it. What can be more peaceful? Because what happened at that particular moment, when you look and your happiness and distress in this way, it means that you already connected with Krishna. Who is eternal? Who is non-changeable? And you really know who you are. You are non-changeable. You are the spirit soul, which is eternal and full of bliss. And this is the absolute point of view. And you're looking for this relative reality from the absolute point of view. And this is called Krishna consciousness. Manas Prabhupada gave this definition of Krishna consciousness. He was flying for the first time in his life. He was already 72 years old. He was an old man. And for the first time he flew in a plane. And he was looking like a little child. And he saw this big skyscrapers in New York, and all the skyscrapers became like matchboxes. And he looking, and he was showing to his son, look, all the skyscrapers like matchboxes. You know, and this servant, he was an experienced Western man, and he was holding the builder, this is magic. And yes, he said, yeah, this is what it is, this is. And then Prabhupada said, this is the vision of a pure devotee. Then Prabhupada said, can you imagine how these skyscrapers will look from the point of view of Krishna? If from the point of view of airplane, it looks so ridiculous, so insignificant. So how will it look from Krishna's point of view? And then he said, the art of seeing everything from Krishna's point of view is called Krishna consciousness. When you see everything within your life, the happiness and distress which is there, everything which is there, from Krishna's point of view, from the absolute point of view, when you measure this from Krishna's point of view, not from your limited and very narrow-minded conception of life, then you are Krishna conscious. And Krishna consciousness, you smile. Why you smile? Because Krishna is smiling. You are in his consciousness, and his consciousness is a heavy consciousness. He is always playing his flute and he's smiling. And you also, you know, you may not play the flute, but at least you smile. Because if you try to play the flute, it may not be so nice. You have to know how to do it. But you smile because you are connected. Or you don't fail your consciousness is Krishna consciousness. And that's what it is. And that's the beginning. That's basically how Krishna explains to Arjuna that you're not this mind. Don't take your mind seriously. Just observe it, watch it. Just try to see, you know, this karma comes, the lust comes, the greed comes, the anger comes. Don't take it too seriously. You know, yeah, the anger came. So what? Does it mean that you have to be angry? No. No, the anger, it comes and it goes. You don't have to be angry. You don't have to yell, you don't have to smash something. Just absorb. Yes, I am angry. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I am angry. I am lusty. Yes, I am lusty. It doesn't mean anything. So what? You are lusty now, you will not be lusty very soon. Just absorb it. Learn to do it. And this will be a very heavy foundation of your life. In this life, you will be able to, and that's exactly what Krishna says here in Prabhupada explains in the Purport. Like he says, son of Kunti, Kaundeya and Bharata, son of Bharata. In this way, if you learn how to do this, how to perform your duties no matter what, you become a very noble human being. You will lead a life full of dignity. And this dignified life will actually attract so much respect of other people. And this dignified life will be the nicest life which you can imagine. This is the way to live life. Don't take this happiness and this stress too seriously. It's not really worth it. Just be happy being the spirit soul. Be happy being spirit soul which has the eternal connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is full of eternity, knowledge and bliss. Thank you very much.
Question.
Even though I try to be a devotee, in practice, still I have anxiety about life circumstances in different ways. How do I get out of this? Well, that's exactly what Krishna said. Just get out of what? Just tolerate. Basically what Krishna says, tolerate. Tolerate means accept. This is a very important point. You just accept that this is what it is. This is, you just accept all the anxieties and circumstances, they will change. Just do it as something which is not important. The problem is that we are shifting our emphasis. This is Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means we shift our emphasis from trivial things to very important things. We have to have, we have to know what is important. So important for us is our relationship. Important for us our relationship with devotees, important for us our relationship with the spiritual master. Everything else will come and go on its own accord. Master Prabhupada said a very amazing statement. He said, everything in this life is for granted. And everything in this life is more or less, how can he say this? It's more or less predestined. Whatever, portion of anxiety you have to experience in this life is predestined. What is not predestined? There is only one thing which is not predestined. Krishna consciousness. How much Krishna consciousness you can acquire during this life? This is the true view of the karma. No astrologer can tell you, you become a pure devotee in the year 2059. No, because your stars will be in a certain position. No, this is ridiculous. Because stars cannot give you Krishna consciousness. So basically, what What is point of tolerance? And Krishna say tolerate means you know what is important and take care of what is important. Don't take too much care, don't take it too seriously what is not important. Just do it. This is your duty. Just fulfill your duty, just do what you have to do, just be you are who you are, and you know, and wish, absorb it. You know, please always remember that you're observer. You're not really the actor. All our anxieties are coming because we assume very falsely the role of the actor. And this is called ahankara. Because of this ahankara, I'm an actor and everything depends on me. You know, I'm busy. Nothing would happen if it was not for me. I'm sorry to say this, everything would happen in its own way, whether you're here or not. So just do what you're supposed to do and don't worry about this. And worry about the Krishna consciousness. And then you will be the heaviest creature in the world. What about anxiety? Like one may have ego in Moscow and the project and the government not allowing the temple. How does one tolerate this? Well, I can explain this from my own experience, how does one tolerate this. See, ultimately it's all Krishna. This is the truth. Very certain. And this is the most pleasant position in life. I try as much as I can. Yes, we want to build a beautiful temple in Moscow. We want to build a very nice, glorious temple for Srila Prabhupada, for Srila Ramadana. We want it. And I hope not only me who wants it, I hope you also want it. It will be a glorious victory for our movement, for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But then, if I take it as my, you know, my thought, my ego, you know, the way to, you know, become puffed up, some, you know, puffed up after the younger Swami decided, and it will become misery from day number one, and it will remain misery. But if you remain servant of Krishna, and you try your best, and you know that the fruits of your action anyway don't belong to you. If you don't try to enjoy the fruits of your action, then you can do it in a very proper Krishna conscious way. You do it as your service and you try your best and ultimately Krishna is in charge. And you watch it. Sometimes I watch it from a little distance. For that I have to go somewhere to South Africa and watch when you are conduct in Moscow. To be a little aloof, because when you are there, it's a little difficult. You are in this little pool of different, you know, unpleasant circumstances, this and that. But then you understand that Krishna is there. Krishna is in everything which is happening there. And he really wants what he wants. He wants us to purify our hearts through these actions. And therefore, he gives such a hard time to the devotees. Sometimes people cannot understand this. And once Prabhupada, after this Bombay history, this, you know, this such a difficult time, such a difficult time. And when everything was finished, it was a nice victory, Prabhupada said, it was a good fight. I was so happy. Because if there's no good fight, what is the fun? There's no fun. Then we become complacent, then we become lazy, and we become Hindu. Lazy. Because something is very traditional, you know, do it in a very complacent way. But this is not the point. The point Krishna said, the point of religion, the point of spiritual life, get up and fight. This is the point. But do it in a very detached way. So this is how it is. Can you explain to us the advancement of ISKCON in Moscow and how can we be of some assistance? Thank you very much for this question. You should have asked it at the beginning of my class, then I would spend the whole time telling about this. But what I can tell you is that ISKCON is really the first devotees of ISKCON. Who became devotees after Prabhupada's vision in 71 they lay a very strong foundation for the ISKCON because they really suffered. They were really persecuted by the government, they were killed. They were, you know, some of them, you know, tortured, severely interrogated, so many unpleasant disturbances, but they were keeping their face intact. And because of that, ISKCON expanded. You know, we are basically officially where they are from 1989, so it's little more than 15 years. But over these 15 years, we distributed 15 million Bhagavad Gita's alone. 15 million Bhagavad Gita's. It means that probably 10 million people read this book, so more. And sometimes, you know, the people that in the modest villages in Russia, they read these books. Not only in Russia, the former Soviet Union. Sometimes we get a letter, you know, half of our village are devotees, and we are performing Namahata. We have 30 devotees, and we have 60 people in this village. And they say, our village is divided into two parts. We have the devotees and non-devotees. Sometimes people do read Prabhupada's books in Russia, and they do become devotees. So many devotees are there, and we have our big festivals. Thousands of people come. By the way, I wanted to invite, I'm very thankful to Swami Damodar Prabhupada Chaitanya Maharaj for inviting me to this nice festival of Radha. But I wanted to invite all of you to Russia to come. We have very nice festivals, so please come in September and the end of September. Or if somebody of you can come, we will take nice care of you. It's a very nice festival. So on this festival, they have basically devotees coming from Russia, and we have usually 4,000 devotees, or sometimes even more. And this is really full-time devotees who are very committed to the movement. And we have 106 different centers all over Russia. And it's usually very small because Russian people are poor. But there's an advantage of this. Because they're poor, they're not puffed up. And because they're not puffed up, they're really practicing very sincerely. And they're very sincerely praying to God, please give us some money. So there is a lot of things which is being done. The Russian devotees are very enthusiastic. You know, Miraj Maharaj, he tells a nice story always, and he speaks about early days. He started coming in the 80s to Russia, and he said the thing which most amazed me, people would come, like here you have this nice temple room which is so beautiful, you know, but in Russia we have little flats, you know, tiny flats, apartments, and people would squeeze in. Sometimes in one room you had 60 people, and people were squatted, were sitting on the head of somebody else, and they were sitting on the wardrobe, or you know, something. And like I said, the thing which amazed me is that they could sit in this position for 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, and be eager to hear more and more and more. It's not unusual when, you know, they sit and chant for so many hours in a row. And it's still there, the spirit is still there. And when we go to this festival, sometimes we have these kirtans. And these kirtans are amazing. It's just something really out of this world. And all these 4,000 people are so eager to chant and to dance. So this is what's going on in Russia, and how you can help in this faith in Chichi for our success. And Swami Damodar Prabhu very kindly, the whole national council, they agreed to help financially in South Africa. They said if you can donate to this project, because we do need, you know, we've some financial difficulties in Russia, the poor country. So if you can help financially, it's also nice. And if you can come and share your experiences with the devotees in Russia, it's also nice. But you can always pray to Shishirada and humanity. Dear Maharaj, since this is your first visit, what are some of your impressions of Sarasvati-vidyatra? How can they improve? I have such a nice impression, and I think that I came here just to learn from you. I really had a very good time here. I was very happy to be with all of you, especially during the festival. I was very impressed by the eagerness and how many people came, and such a nice festival. I'm really not in a position to say how you can improve. Who am I to say? I need to know from you how I can improve. Tell me, I'm very happy to hear this. And when I see that this beautiful room, you know, then it would be really stupid to say how you can improve. How you can improve? It's so nice here and so accommodating, and I really like the audience, and I really feel at home here, and I'm very grateful to all of you for everything which you are doing, for all the nice, basic work which is going on, because this is very important. This is very important for everybody. We have to show the example to the world, and in this country, the South African Yatra has such a good reputation in the country. That is really exemplary in this court. Nelson Mandela came so many times here, so on. You know, this is all my impressions. I can only say so many exclamation marks, and I only thank you again and again. And I'm sure Srila Prabhupada is very, very pleased with the development which takes place here. And I can be of some little assistance, I believe. How can I become eternally happy? Is there a way to escape the problems of life? Well, I briefly explained this in the lecture, but there is a way to escape the problems of life. It just don't take them too seriously. It was another problem. As problems are artificial. This is not the problems which really, you know, worth of being too serious about. That's it. And to be eternally happy means to be the servant of the Lord. The servants are always happy. You know, because they just serve. And nobody can deprive you of service. Why am I unhappy? Because we have the false conception of ourselves. And in this false conception, we say, this has to be mine, this has to belong to me, oh, I lost this, oh, I have to get this. This is all our worries. So there is only one thing, which is nobody. And the very fact that somebody can take something from us means that it doesn't belong to us. It's not ours. And we are so worried about these things which I lost or which I have to acquire. This is not yours, anyway. So the way to become happy and to get rid of all the problems is just understand who you are. And to understand who you are means to understand I am a servant. And this is the position which nobody can deprive. These people in this world, they're so mad, they want to have this position or that position. But they lose it anyway. But what you can always do, you can always serve Krishna. You cannot do anything else always. But you can always serve Krishna. Even if you're badly, if you're sick like a dog, you still can serve Krishna. You still can remember him. You still can be his servant inside. So this is how you become happy, because you're not becoming artificially designated in this world. The Christians say that if you are not washed in the blood of Jesus, we will go to hell. Hare Krishna. Gruesome quotes. You take shower of the blood of Jesus. No. This is all, see, this concept of vicarious salvation is actually quite late development. Jesus Christ never said this. Believe it or not, he never taught this. This is all invention of Paul and later Christians who kind of, you know, artificially imposed this conception on the simple teaching of Jesus Christ. What Jesus Christ said, he didn't say this. He said, be like children. Be happy like children. Because if you're not, be simple. Not be complicated. You know, this is his teaching. This is what his sermon on the mountain. You know, he said, you know, be simple-minded, be happy, and serve God, and love God. Don't be envious. You know, he didn't say, you know, on this mountain, he didn't say, you know, please take shower in my blood. I will give you some blood, and then you wash away. No. All this thing is just for some lazy people. These people, they are lazy because they want to be saved by some kind of miraculous way, somebody has to save them. But in the Dhamma Sutra, it is said, Anaviti Shabdat, Anaviti Shabdat, Anaviti Shabdat. You can be saved. The salvation or liberation comes through the sound. You have to get this sound vibration. Now, Shabdat also means from the scripture, because scripture is also Shabdat. It's also sound which regulates our lives. So basically this is where salvation is coming from. The salvation, yes, you have to wash your heart, but you have to wash your heart through this process of devotional service by trying to, you know, get rid of all these problems which are imposed upon you by your heart. All this karma, krodha, lobha, maha, moha, madhava, kaya, they all come in because of your false ego. So this is where salvation is coming from, not in some kind of miraculous way. I don't appreciate this concept.